right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
Yeah, Mo, that team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. Homer said it all there, buddy.
He said a mouthful.
I could play it again, but it'd just be the exact same thing, and I don't know if we could handle the disappointment again.
Well, handling disappointment seems to be something we're very good at, Tim, especially this season.
Yes, but you know what? I blame it. It's the Kurt Cousins curse. It's I told you last week. I told you.
I regret nothing.
Can't play him, man. At least not this season. I'm trying to find up with it. You know, sitting through the game, and the second half where it really turned to crap, I was just trying to think of all the different kitschy, cute things that I could come up with, sayings I could come up for that game. Alouettes played like turkeys. I think the best one is, always on Sunday games at Percival Molson, if anybody who's been there, and Cliff, I know you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I bring this up. Nearly just the tail end of the third, but specifically in the fourth quarter, we're attacked. Mm-hmm. The entire stadium is attacked by seagulls.
Oh, yeah.
They're just a plethora. What do you call a group of seagulls?
Effing annoying.
But you know what? My friend that I'm sitting next to, that I used to sit next to for the games, and I just said to him, you know what? They're like condors. They're picking the carcass clean. That's exactly what. They weren't waiting for French fries like they normally do. They were just picking the carcass clean. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I made the joke on Twitter that, well, seagulls do tend to gravitate towards garbage.
That was nice. That's perfect. That gets a virtual thumbs up. That gets a virtual heart. There you go. I think a virtual like.
Yeah.
I don't know where to start, but I think it really started the downward spiral because I'm sitting on the west side of the stadium. I'm in the south stands, but on the west side near the end zone. Being on the Alouettes, near the Alouettes bench, it just started with that missed field goal and something. And this is on the Owls' first drive. Something did not seem right at all with Farrah, and you could see him when he was coming off the field that he was holding. And nobody's, officially it's a lower body injury.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know, the way he was practicing, it was a groin. It had to be, or a hammy. The way he was holding near his crotchal area.
That would be the medical term?
Yes. It had to be. It had to be a groin. Had to be.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he hasn't exactly been money 100% all year. But I mean, he has been extremely solid ever since he joined the Alouettes full time. As far as kicking goes.
Yeah.
The name we shall not speak.
We may have to next week.
That's the unfortunate part. Although I gotta say, when I saw that Farrah was pulling up lame, and they decided to go to was it Kyle Graves as the as the punter, and then there were possibility if necessary to use Nick Shortle as a field goal kicker.
That's what it was. Shortle. I couldn't see. I didn't have a thing with me, and my phone had gone dead, so I couldn't see who number 26 was. So it was okay. It was Shortle. Okay. Okay.
Funny thing too, I wasn't terribly concerned when this had happened. When I saw him actually lining up to take some practice kicks, I remembered last season. It was his first year in the league. I remember going to a practice once, and dude lined up for a 40-yard field goal and drained it.
Huh.
So yeah, no word of a lie. And yeah, he's a linebacker.
Shades of Ben.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. That's why as soon as I saw him lining up, I'm like, this could be interesting. And no one would see this coming. That's the beautiful part. Like, I'd seen it. Like, I actually saw him do this in practice quite some time ago. And like I said, like, nothing but net, too. Like, it wasn't like a lucky kick or anything. Like, 40 yards, drained it. Like, it was nothing. Like, wow. All right. Not bad for a linebacker, like I said. So, I mean, to be able to use someone like that in these emergency situations, I mean, it's just one of those nice little you call it ace in the holes to have.
Yeah.
Kyle Graves, we like to joke about him being like the Swiss Army knife. Like,
isn't he like a triple threat? Let's see. He plays special teams. He is originally a quarterback.
Yep.
And now a part-time punter kicker.
And technically, his actual position is wide receiver. So, I mean, like I said, he's a Swiss Army knife, jack of all trades, whatever expression you want to use. I think in French they call it the Boucher Universal.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I guess his position will now be SK, right?
Yeah.
So we knew something was wrong, and it just started right there. And what a way to start the game itself. It's funny, you know, the beginning of the 2 points really didn't make a difference, obviously, at the end of the game. But it was just a thing of, you know, just a thing of a sign of things to come.
And what really struck me was that the defense of the Alouettes played their usual phenomenal game. And you saw it right away. Like, you saw Edmonton, like, they were, I wouldn't necessarily say rattled, but they almost had to sit up and take notes, like, oh, geez, we got to take these guys seriously now. Like, that was really the thought that you sort of just got just watching this game, like in the first half, was that I won't say that they necessarily took the Alouettes lightly, but at the same time, maybe they thought, okay, well, this may not be such a challenge after all. Like that, but that first half, I think that really kept Edmonton honest. And then, yeah, towards the second half, that's where things just really fell apart for Montreal.
The last four games coming up, though, Cliff, we have to decide whether we're going to have Ezra Cato should be our starter coming, you know, going forward. You know, the other couple of things that happened this week too, and we're going to try to look for the positives if possible. I mean, sure, we didn't expect to lose Terrell Sutton for the game with his injury. Brandon Rutley is a great running back, but to me, he is a backup. Then that's what he is. I mean, you and I were talking before the show, and we only came up with two words, and it is Jerome Messam. So, yeah, that's that. Now, I did see a couple of things. Now, I want your opinion on this. Happened a couple of times during the game. And it's really not a surprise, I mean, but it's just a matter of why it was occurring. But a couple of times coming off the field, De'Ron Carter was absolutely livid. He was absolutely pissed off. Now, that type of thing where it's not one of those come off the field and then start jawing as soon as you're off the field. This was after the play, took off his helmet, and the scowl on his face said it all. And one time also, Cam Cato came off and it's just livid. Now the question is this a matter of frustration, or is it just a matter of that, you know, we just did this last week, why are we able to do it this week?
Well, you can definitely see the frustration. There's absolutely no question about that. I just look at some of the plays that were being called, and I don't know if it was just simply a matter of not being able to execute more than anything else, because, I mean, again, it's still Chapdelaine making the play calls. I mean, it sure looked like Anthony Calavillo was running this offense again. Again, try not to be disparaging, but let's call it what it is. I thought all this was supposed to be taken care of with Chapdelaine calling the plays, but now is it a matter of, and like I was very worried about and still am to, for the most part, are we going back to the same old tricks again? Because,
well, the floater screens pissed me off to all end. They really did. I'm like, what are you doing? What is this drop shot crap? Mm. Sorry. I think there's going to be a run of tangents tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, everything looks so cohesive and looks so crisp last week. And it's by and large the same team that's playing, the same Alouettes team taking the field that took the field against Toronto last week, and they just absolutely, you know, fell apart against Edmonton. It's mind-boggling to say the least. Like, all of a sudden, like, I know Edmonton, like I said, this is a team that is just starting to hit their stride right now, and props to those guys, because I'll tell you right now, Mike Riley is, like I said, he is very much an elite quarterback in this league. There's simply no question about that. Darius Bowman and Darrell Walker are just fantastic, absolutely fantastic receivers, and they just made our defense look foolish out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely foolish. Like, these guys couldn't catch a cold, let alone a receiver. It was remarkable. So what happened? Like, what was that big disconnect? Why did everything go back to the way it used to be?
Especially in the second half.
that's just it. Like, the first half of this game was, for the most part, competitive. The defense was on fire. Everything was clicking. The offense just wasn't, wasn't quite there, but it was almost one of those things like you just hope that, okay, maybe, you know, the guy's just going to get himself settled in a little bit and things are just going to come alive in the second half. But, I mean, like, the second half, like I thought, said this team is going to have to make some adjustments. I mean, to only be down by 5 at the half against a very good Eskimos team, that's not bad. That gives you hope. That gives you something positive to look forward to when the second half gets underway. And then it just all felt like just almost right from Jump Street. The whole thing fell apart and there was just no going back. They just couldn't get themselves back together at that point. It just kept piling on. It kept snowballing. It was just a terrible, terrible effort in the second half by Montreal.
Well, the 21-point clip in the third quarter really didn't help at all. I mean, it was just complete night and day. And I remember saying last week, I said, the Owls can survive and make this a close game. You know, let Riley get his yards. You know, let him pass for 300 yards a game. You know, let him throw to Darius Bowman. Let him throw to Darryl Walker. Let them get their yards. They got their yards, but the problem is that the Owls defense couldn't do anything to keep him out of the end zone. And at certain points, too, you know, especially John White also, it was shades of BC all over again. Oh, and yeah. At some of these points, it was like, a couple of the fans around me is like, are you even trying on some of these, you know, some of these runs by White?
Oh, I mean, 145 all-purpose yards, or was it all-purpose? No, just rushing yards.
No, 145 rushing.
Oh, I mean, it's maddening. I keep talking about how great this defense is, and like I said, they could not do anything. They couldn't stop White. They couldn't stop Mike Riley, and he had all kinds of time in the pocket. My word, the guy could knit a sweater for sake. Unbelievable. And then he'd throw up these prayers.
Oh, no kidding.
And everybody else is just gawking around, looking and just getting completely owned.
Okay.
Completely owned by Darius Bowman and Darryl Walker. Like, they were having a field day out there. I bet they wish they could play Montreal every week if they're going to play like that.
I mean, you know, Riley did what he had to do. I think he became the first Edmonton Eskimo quarterback to pass for 5,000 yards in a season, I think.
No, I think he was the third.
Third? Okay. Bowman got his 100 yards. Walker came very close. One of the bigger surprises also, which played a huge factor in this game, was Brandon Zylstra. He couldn't be stopped either.
No, and this is a guy that he's only been with the team for a couple of weeks, and now he's really emerged as a viable threat for Edmonton. And this is the kind of guy that you want to pick up late in the season just to help take some of the load off of guys like Bowman, Walker, Ryan Getzlaff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, guy's playing outstanding football as well. I mean, looks just one of those pleasant surprises that you just we used to be able to find in Montreal. This guy that you pick up and like, who the hell is that? And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, he's catching 100 yards receiving, or just running all over people, or touchdowns all over the place. I mean, that's the kind of guy that we used to be able to find in the middle of nowhere. And now it's Hervey and Moss that are finding these diamonds in the rough instead of Jim Popp. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, hats off to Edmonton. Like, they played an absolutely fantastic game, and they are definitely trending in the right direction and just at the right time, too. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, they came off their losing streak, and then they've put together quite a few wins in a row. So it's exactly right at the right time. And it will either be Edmonton or Winnipeg that's going to do the crossover, because by the looks of things, the CFL East is going to set a record of futility, very possible, where they'll become the first division in league history to have a divisional winner that is possibly under 500.
Oh, yeah. And the scary thing is, too, there are going to be two Eastern teams that are going to have home games in the playoffs with that record of futility.
Yeah, I want to ask about that, because that's made a few people talk about that. And I know we have a lot more to talk about, too. But let's just give – I think one thing, too, is that Kenny Stafford basically was invisible. He went in for that one long play, and then basically he was invisible for the rest of the game. They didn't go to him. B.J. Cunningham was not really used very much in the first half at all. Rutley gets, five targets, five catches. But, of course, they're just short outs. So it's short outs are those little dink passes that really grinded my gears on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Jaeger, yeah, he managed to get a touchdown, but like I said, just I can see now why a lot of people's faith in Rakeem Cato has remained shaken. And it really just came down to my worst fear was that, no, this team doesn't have it together. They were just very fortunate to play a very bad Toronto team that just got worse and is not going to be getting any better anytime soon.
No.
As they say, the cake was a lie.
Now, a couple of things. And you were talking about how badly we're getting burned. And a story came out, I think it was on Friday, from Herb Zerkowski, because the whole thing, this whole rumor mill started with Billy Parker. And I actually had a chance. I talked with him real quickly on Facebook the other night, because he hadn't read the original. My understanding was he hadn't seen the original quotes that came from the team where Coach Schaap said he was going through some things. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Do they need to put the differences aside and let Billy play again? I mean, it's very possible this may be the last four games in Billy Parker's career as an Alouette player. Has the experiment ended so far, at least, and let these guys play second fiddle to Billy Parker to show what – I mean, it's funny. Considering how many games that Billy has missed this year, he still is tied for the team lead in interceptions. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Is it time to make a switch now? Let him play? I mean, look at who they're playing upcoming – you know, look who they're playing against these next four games. You know, two against the top team in the league.
Yeah. With some, again, outstanding receivers that can easily run roughshod on a young secondary or even a, I hate to say it, older secondary as well. Mm-hmm. So it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, like a real catch-22 when it comes to Billy Parker because, yeah, I mean, I've got mad respect for Billy Parker and everything he's done for the Alouettes, but I even saw last year a little bit. He looked like he was losing a step here and there. I mean, and again, to his credit, he had a great training camp, came out and played extremely well. I mean, he almost had no choice because of the replacements of Mitchell White and Dominique Ellis. I mean, Billy Parker was, along with Jovan Johnson, the de facto veterans in secondary. Mm-hmm. So he had no choice. But if he's going to keep up with the young guys, he's got to be able to step up and also lead by example, which, to his credit, he has been able to do. But now with these injury woes, and like I said, he's not a young man anymore. So, I mean, there's a big part of me that's saying, well, I mean, look how well this team is done with Ramon Taylor and Greg Henderson filling in for him and Jonathan Mincy as well. Like these three young guys, for the most part, have played extremely well. Like I said, these guys, every week I've been saying the secondary is going to be tested by their opponents, and they've answered the call every single time for the most part. Mm-hmm. Not perfect, but again, considering you've got three rookies in secondary, they're putting up some respectable numbers and they're actually making plays. So I guess the idea would be, especially if I'm Noel Thorpe, is you go with, maybe I wouldn't necessarily say the hot hand here, but you know what you have with these young guys, and they're only going to get better. The more playing time they get, the better they're going to get. So
you're, am I understanding, you're saying no, do not put Billy back in? Let his time as Alouette's DB just fade off into the sunset if he comes back with the Owls next year? I mean, it's a free agency year for him also.
I would honestly say, yeah. Again, football is a very, very unforgiving business, and I hate to say it, but I mean, I think if things were still really bad, I mean, they're not great in Montreal, but I mean, if they were like, you know, early Saskatchewan 2016 bad right now, then I'd say, yeah, of course you got to have Billy back in there, because at least this guy knows what he's doing. But I mean, right now, this team is playing the way that it is, like, and defense is not the problem with Montreal. It never has been. And likely never will be overall. But the way that these young guys have been playing, I mean, I won't say you don't miss Billy Parker, because, again, he's just a phenomenal player and just an absolute talent. But at the same time, yeah, we don't miss Billy Parker.
I think in a way we do. I mean, you can see it sometimes. I really think that they need to give him another shot. Put him in there and let's see if they can do something over the next four games. Hopefully they can make these games the next four games at least somewhat respectable. I think put him in. I don't know if there's some politics going on. I don't know. My case, I think there is, because remember, the same thing happened, if you think about it, the same thing happened to
Gerald Brown.
Yeah, Gerald Brown. Same exact thing happened to Gerald Brown. in my opinion, where again, like, something wasn't right and falling out of sorts and, yeah, gone. Now, mind you, it was at the end of the year, but he was benched for a couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, I think they need to put him back in, at least for the last four games.
But then who do you take out? Like, which of the young guys, who would you take out? Or do we just not trust an extra receiver? Or
well, they've been doing that with wide receiver. They did that with Rutley last week before Sutton got hurt. You know, we only went with one. So, I mean, I understand. And juggling when it comes to the ratio, it's probably one of the hardest things to do. Hardest things to do in football, period, because you don't do it in the NFL. You don't do it in the Arena League. You don't have to worry about these type of ratios. So it can be tough. Now, I think it all is going to all come down to be fair. I think it may come down to the punter and the kicker situation, too, because, with Graves being put in, that would help. But he's already in there.
Hmm?
So I don't know. And if Bede gets activated, then what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's
obviously he's a national.
International.
He's considered international?
Yes.
Like Bede was a national.
No, he's from France.
No, that's the second time I've done that. You're right. You're right. I was thinking because he played for Laval.
Yeah, a lot of people would think that, but
yeah,
no,
you're
it's
right.
Because he's born
but
in France.
Again, Cahoon.
Well,
anyways, yeah.
Hey, I didn't make the rules. I didn't make the ratio rules, but
we didn't make the rules. We just bitch about them.
Yes, indeed.
So it's I don't know what to do. I think give him a shot, but I don't know. Something's got to be done. But both you and I are agreeing that maybe there does need to be some sort of change of quarterback at least somewhere within the next four games, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, to his credit, Rakeem Kato has been put in crappy situation after crappy situation. And you see the effort is there. You see he's trying, but it just – I don't know. I really think that it's not clicking. It's not clicking in a consistent way, and I think that this team, more than anything else, does need consistency. But I'm saying this as we're about to advocate changing to the quarterback. I just don't see Chapdelaine terribly impressed with what Cato has been offering. Even in the wins, I mean, like the win last week against Toronto, like Cato looked really good, but he wasn't outstanding. Like he was the beneficiary of having the receiving core that he did, and yeah, I think at this point too, I think we're now at that point. I mean, we almost have to be in that mindset of, like I said earlier, when Chapdelaine was named as head coach, like we're just throwing against the wall and seeing what sticks. Like this is like essentially a training camp. A pre-training camp for 2017. So with that in mind, you may as well put Vernon Adams in and see what he can do as well, and see if maybe the team responds a little bit better to him,
right,
as opposed to how they've been responding with Rakeem Kato. Because yeah, Rakeem Kato does have talent. He does have what it takes to be a serviceable quarterback in this league. But at this point too, like you still have the potential to make the playoffs. And I would say, if Vernon Adams is he going to be better than Kato? It's hard to say because we really haven't seen very much of Adams, and without being at practice and everything like that. And of course, everybody, this is the one I'm going to just veer off to the side for a second here. I want to throw up every time I hear the coaching staff say, well, we had a good week at practice. Well, guess what? You had a terrible game. I'd rather you have a week at practice and a great game. You think you can work on that? Is there a playbook for that? I would really love that, because I am sick and tired of hearing we had a great week at practice. A great week at practice doesn't mean a goddamn thing. I'm not paying $90 a ticket to hear about a great week at practice. I can go to watch practice for free. I don't have to worry about paying for parking, paying for tickets, paying for food, paying for jerseys, paying for anything like that just to go and watch you stink up the game and then try to justify it by saying that, well, we had a great week at practice.
Yeah.
Screw that. I want terrible weeks at practice if that's the case, if it means it's going to be a great game.
Yeah. Now,
but again,
and of all years too, by the way, you know, we trade away our first round draft pick for a quarterback that I understand he is a pure rookie in the CFL. But we've traded, and we could easily, I don't think we will. I think we'll end up as the second, with this. If we had a pick, it would be second pick of the year. But we won't, because we traded that away. We need to see what this quarterback can do. We need to see what Adams can do. We traded for him to see what he can do. He's on the active roster. you know, if not, bring up some of your, you know, which I did not know, you can bring in some extra people. I think you can bring in some extra people for your practice roster, but activate some of these guys. Activate some of the guys. You know, we have Herb Zirkowski did an amazing story this past week on our guys on the practice roster. And we have a running back that's just waiting, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got a absolutely phenomenal potential talent in Cam McDaniel, a former member of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish who played outstanding when he was with Notre Dame. And again, just one of those guys that definitely not big enough to play in the NFL, but with his speed, he could definitely be a superstar in the CFL. And the idea of a white running back still is a little bit offsetting for some traditionalists, but I'll tell you, the kid's got speed on the ground like you wouldn't believe. Like, you think Sam Jaeger is fast, and he definitely is. Like, when he puts his speed to good use, he's absolutely outstanding. I definitely see a lot of that same speed in McDaniel that you would in Sam Jaeger.
Yeah.
So, I mean, God forbid if Terrell Sutton stays hurt or if they just don't decide Brandon Rutley is worth playing, which would also be a terrible mistake as well. But, I mean, if you're looking for another running back option, this McDaniel kid, I saw quite a bit in training camp with this guy, and I'm very happy that he's still on the practice roster, just because, you know, we can keep this guy ready to go, and when his number gets called, I think a lot of people are going to be taken by surprise at just how the potential this guy has to be good in this league.
Yeah, so maybe we need to give him, you know, give some of the guys a chance, but it's funny, you were saying before, slim chance. The Owls have no chance of making the playoffs. They don't. They have none. They really don't, because if by some miracle they win their next four, you know, it depends on what Hamilton and Ottawa are going to do, and they already don't have the season series versus both of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and what's going to happen too is there's definitely going to be a crossover. There's absolutely no question about that. Sure. So now, at this point, Montreal, Ottawa, Hamilton, and even Toronto, believe it or not, are fighting to be one of the top two teams in the East, and that's the only way you're going to make the playoffs is being one of those top two teams.
Right.
So,
That's good segue. There are a few more things we're going to talk about that actually more CFL related than anything else. But first, before we get to where we're talking about you wanted to mention specifically about the crossover and stuff like that. There's been a lot of banter about a few things on the Twitter sphere and over social media over the past couple of days. First, Mark Trestman. Mark, for anybody who didn't know, Mark Trestman was actually released of his duties as the OC in Baltimore, and I'm not surprised. They're horrible. The Baltimore Ravens are just not that good this year. A perennial AFC North powerhouse is just not doing it this year. So they had decided to make a change. Sound familiar, Cliff? Really does.
Yeah. Gosh, where have I heard that before?
Now, the question is now, and I don't really know how it's been gauged so far, but would you entertain the idea that if it occurs over the offseason that the Wetnall family decides to go ahead and bring back Mark Trestman as our head coach?
To tell you the truth, and I've already said this on Twitter and definitely drew a lot of side eye for, to tell you the God's honest truth, no, I would not want to bring him back.
No, it's just a matter of that. I mean, he had a quarterback in Baltimore.
He did.
Which is, you know, I may hate him. I really, you know, I'm not a fan of him at all. You know, he gets his big increase after winning the Super Bowl. That's usually how it goes. But what?
As an aside, let's make one thing clear. Joe Flacco did not win the Super Bowl. His defense won him a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
I could win the Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens with that defense. Yeah. That's just how it is. And both of their Super Bowl wins were as a result of their defense, not because of their quarterback.
So, and then, you know, Trestman did have AC and the plethora of receivers, et cetera, when he was here. And, you know, he may have it may have been just the beginning of the end, so to speak. Not necessarily Mark Trestman before he left, but maybe a decline in the team itself. AC, et cetera, et cetera. But he doesn't really have a quarterback. It's kind of like, you know, even though he did technically have a named quarterback in Chicago when he was head coach. But I don't know. I mean, he would be starting from scratch. And maybe, unfortunately, that, you know, like they did in Saskatchewan, maybe that's what we have to do here. maybe it would be good to bring him back or go another direction. I'm not sure. I think last year when it was talked about, when I think before he switched, I think I was all happy about it. But I don't know. I don't know if I would want him here. I don't know if I would want him back.
Well, and here's how I'll argue it. How many times has Jim Popp come back and been head coach of this Alouettes team?
4.
And what were the results?
Was it 20-36? I could be wrong, but just off the top of my head. At least 10 games under 500.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there is an old saying, you can't go home again. And like I said, towards the end, I'll give Mark Trestman all the credit in the world. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the guy was an absolutely outstanding coach for us in that 5-year period that he was here in Montreal. But towards the end, he was just getting figured out. I mean, the defense, I think, was finally starting to catch on to how he plays. And also to his insistence of hanging on and making AC play as much as what he did and not developing the future. That's unfortunately what Trestman does. He latches onto his quarterback and he will ride him to the bitter end. I mean, it worked with AC because AC was an absolutely outstanding quarterback.
Right.
But he did the exact same thing in Chicago with Jay Cutler to horrendous results. He did have Flacco's backing and – again, I think there's other factors in play as far as the decline in Baltimore's offensive game, more so than Joe Flacco, believe it or not. But this is what Trestman does. I just don't think putting him back in there would be instant success for the Alouettes. And what's his reputation for developing players? What's his reputation for developing talent? I mean, he played great because absolutely, like you said, he had AC. He had a whole bunch of absolutely fantastic receivers. He had just an absolutely dominant offense, and the defense too was nothing to sneeze at either. So I mean, I would say it wasn't quite as strong as what it is now, but that's just the way Montreal has sort of reinvented itself as a defensive powerhouse nowadays, as opposed to being defensive powerhouse. But putting Trestman back in with this current group right now, I just wouldn't have that confidence that he'd be able to replicate what he did in 2008, 2009, 2010, and so on. I just don't see it happening the way that it did. And as much as he enjoyed his time in Montreal, I also have to wonder if maybe he's kind of past it at this point. I think he appreciates everything that the Alouettes had done for him and his coaching career, but I think the best role for Trestman right now would be actually to go to the NCAA. And I think there'd be a lot of opportunities for him to be either an OC there or quarterbacks coach or maybe even a head coach at one of the smaller schools. I think that would be a much better fit for him at this juncture right now, as opposed to going back to the Alouettes, because I think a lot of people would want him back. And I can see that a lot of people would be salivating at the idea of having Trestman come back, if not with the Alouettes, then with some other team. But I greatly fear that that's what would happen, is nothing would change. And I definitely don't think it would work in Montreal. There's no question about that. Could it work for another team? Potentially, but just a lot of it would have to really depend on how well equipped that team is
right.
to play.
Right.
That, again, I could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, if the Wettenhall family decided to offer him the job and he took it and he came back and was the same old Mark Trestman and just with a whole new cast of characters and ended up getting Montreal back to the glory that we've all know and love, then hey, I will gladly eat crow or humble pie or whatever, you know, humiliating thing I would have to. I'd gladly do it. I'd do it with a smile on my face. But I'm telling you right now, I just, as much as I love Trestman, as much as I have all the respect in the world for him, I really just don't think it would be a great idea to bring him back.
Okay, off-season's going to be very interesting this year. It's probably going to be one of the most interesting off-seasons in Alouette's history in a long time, actually. Second thing you wanted to talk about, CFL-wise, we're talking about the crossover. And it's very possible that there is going to be a team that crosses over that may have a better record than both the divisional winner and the second place team. A lot of people have been saying, and it's a lot of the CFL pundits have been saying, it's that maybe to make it quote unquote fair that they should get the home game. What's your thought on this? You know, you have a team that basically is coming over to your home, being the East Division, and saying, no, we're taking over. And you can't have your home game.
Well, I'm always of the opinion that the best teams should be in the playoffs playing. And certainly this year, that won't be the case because, yeah, it's very, very possible that we will see one, if not two, teams in the playoffs with a negative record. And both could be potentially hosting playoff games. It certainly wouldn't be fair for a team like Edmonton or Winnipeg, which right now would be one of those two teams that would cross over to the East. They'd have to go on the road to somewhere in the East and play not once but twice, potentially.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a tough call. Like I said, I would love to see ideally, you should want the best teams playing no matter what. Does that mean we got to scrap the divisions, put everybody in one division and do that? I have a hard time with that as well. I guess I'm a bit of a traditionalist in that sense. Like, it really should be East versus West. But, I mean, at the same time, too, how much fun is it going to be if the Calgary and Stampeders are just going to wail on, I don't know, you know, if God forbid they ever made it out, like the Ottawa Red Blacks or the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're talking about the best Western team versus the best Eastern team, yeah, it wouldn't be all that exciting, to be honest with you. But, I mean, it also would look a little hokey to see the Calgary Stampeders play the Edmonton Eskimos for the Grey Cup. And imagine if the Eskimos win as the Eastern representative. Like, how weird is that?
Well, I think that's one of the quirks about having the, you know, having the crossover. And I think the crossover would work actually in a couple of other football leagues. I think it would work really, really well. My thought is this. Yes, you have a better record, but you've also had it in many times. And the NFL is a good example where you have had a team that finished at 500 or under make the playoffs, be a divisional winner. I think it was it Seattle that pulled off an upset when New Orleans came in, and Seattle was only a 500 winner for the division.
Not even a 500 winner. They're 7-9.
So anything can happen. And I think, you know what, the crossover is there to bring over another team. Okay, I get it. But if you win a division, you deserve to have the home game. Or to be the second place, if you're first or second, you deserve to have that home game, no matter what your record is. That's my opinion of it. I think, yeah, it's East-West. We all know that the crossover team has never made it past the conference division final, ever. Mm. And I don't think that'll happen this year. Whoever there's a crossover.
So you think whoever ends up in first place in the East will beat the crossover team?
They first have to get past the second place team.
True.
But a lot of people are talking about there. You know, sure, Calgary's running away with it right now. They're setting all these records, you know, for consecutive games won. You know, Bo Levi, same thing. But they also have a bye week. Last week of the season. Yeah, I know Edmonton did the exact same thing last year. Yeah, a total fluke, by the way. It's happening this way, too. Anything can happen with it. They will have 3 weeks off. Anything can happen in 3 weeks, you know? Or they could pull a Tom Brady and look what he did last week. But mind you, it was versus Cleveland.
Yeah.
So it won't be the same caliber. It may be a BC. It may be an Edmonton. Maybe a Winnipeg. Whomever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it as it is. Keep the crossover. You know what? You win your division. You get that automatic berth to the final. Leave it as is. Shouldn't change it. I think that's the way it should be because it's. I've seen, you know, to do otherwise would be Bush, in my opinion. It really would be. You know, kind of makes it moot. You know, you win, you in. Oh, well, I don't know if we're going to make the playoffs. Blah, blah, blah. No, keep it as is. CFL news, more CFL news, is the very interesting thing that happened in the Winnipeg BC game this past week. Fourth quarter. Basically, that Winnipeg is trying to kill the clock. It does look that BC strips the ball before their running back goes down, but the command center gets involved, as they do with every play for when it comes to turnover, and they deem it was not a fumble. When you saw that, what did you think at first? Obviously, the command center is there to make the correct call.
Yeah, and honestly, like, what's the point of having replay if you can't even get that right? I mean, I can understand on first glance not thinking that was a fumble or finding whatever reason it was, but I mean, once they slowed everything down and they replayed it a number of times, yeah, it's clear as day. That was a fumble. It was a clear fumble. Play was still live. It wasn't whistled dead or anything like that.
They were calling, I think the official thing is they were calling forward motion was stopped, I think. I saw the play too, and it was very, very close. And I know it was a huge, you know, everybody from all the big guys who talk about the CFL and stuff like that, you know, I'm like a 51-49 that it was a fumble. It was that close. I spoke to our friend Steve Daniel before the show, and I asked him about that particular play, and he said in his opinion it was not a fumble. So that's interesting in itself. There have been not very many out there who've actually said that it was, in their opinion, it was not a fumble. It was close.
Well, and again, like, just being able to watch it on TV and being able now to see it from numerous angles and at various speeds and what have you, like with the technology that we currently have in place for this sort of thing, the idea is that this is supposed to help clear this up. There shouldn't be any human error or anything like that. Like, and again, you talk about just how it looks. I mean, like, looks wise, it looked like a fumble. And I often wonder, like, maybe you have to sort of go with what you see, kind of thing. Like, unless you could find something that was conclusive. Or, yeah, conclusive, just to say that, no, this definitely wasn't a fumble. And the fact, too, that the referees are never called out on the carpet, they're not really held accountable to the media or anything like that. Like, that's another thing, too, that's kind of – it's got to be frustrating for fans as well, because if you got the call wrong, it happens. Everybody makes mistakes, but you got to own that. And the fact that the referees are never once questioned by the media or – really, truly, but even by the league, even, or if they are, like, it's got to be behind closed doors, and it's just one of those, well, don't do it again kind of things. Like, there's no, like, in the meantime, fans are being completely ripped off because, yeah, that was an absolutely fantastic football game for the first, like, 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was just an absolutely outstanding football game, but I guarantee you, all people are going to remember is now this fumble debacle, and it's truly unfortunate. Like, you know, credit to Winnipeg because they won the game, and give credit to BC because they hung in there, and they by all rights, definitely should have had the chance to get the ball. And again, there's no guarantee they were going to score. And, you know, a lot of people even say, I even had some BC fans saying, well, we shouldn't have even been in that position in the first place. So I get what they're saying, but at the same time, like, this was their chance. Like, this is something that could have made or break this game. And like I said, a great football game at the end of the day is still just marred by this. And that's all people talk about now. When you talk about, hey, did you see that BC Winnipeg game? Yeah, that fumble. That's all it's going to be now, is the fumble. Or was it a fumble? You know what I mean? Like, that's unfortunate. Like, that just, it's one of those things where just the CFL just cannot stop stepping on their own toes sometimes when it comes to incidents.
Yeah, they've had a couple of bonehead things over the past couple of weeks. And again, looking at it, it seemed to be a fumble, and where they came of it, I'm really curious. I should talk to Steve Moore and hear what his thoughts are on it. But that's interesting. It's interesting. And then the big thing, you know, the league was promoting this live mic thing for three of the four games this past week. And it was done a couple of weeks ago. I know with relative success to the broadcast, but, you know, the teams are sort of iffy about it. But Edmonton this week decided at the very last moment, as soon as they arrived at Percival Molson, that, we don't want to do it. Now, the question is, will they, if there is a fine or some sort of ramifications, will it be a slap of the wrist like it was to Kent Austin? Or will it be something substantial where basically saying, if we mandate something and telling you that our national television provider is going to be doing this gimmick, that's what it is. You have to do it. Now, first, my question to you is, does it really matter that they decided, that they said no? Or did they pull a faux pas when it comes to, I mean, because if this were the NFL and were NBC, CBS, ESPN, or, you know, or Fox, then I'm sure that they would, you know, there would be some ramifications. What do you think?
Well, I don't fault Jason Moss and Mike Riley for saying no. I mean, it's certainly their apparently it was their choice to say no to participate in this thing. And should they have been, I don't want to say forced necessarily, but they really should have been on board with this, especially since the league had promoted it as such. And for them to decide at the last minute that, yeah, we're not doing that. I mean,
you know, do you think there are reasons for not doing it really wash at all?
Not particularly.
You know, I mean, it's for anybody in here. I think it's basically to paraphrase. We didn't want to do it because I think it's basically we didn't want to give anything away.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able to concentrate on the game.
And yeah, like I said, that's certainly their prerogative, and I can certainly appreciate that viewpoint for them. Where what I would see it more as, though, and I'm sure that I'm not alone in this, is that you're basically biting the hand that feeds. Like, TSN at the end of the day is one of the main reasons why the CFL gets the exposure that it does. There's absolutely no question about that.
And they pay big money for this, you know, for their rights.
Not only that, but also they've also put a lot of promotion into the league itself and into these sort of things. So, I mean, yeah, is it a gimmick? Of course it's a gimmick. There's that, you know, you can paint it as innovative and blah, 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 all you want. But at the end of the day, no. And is it stupid? Does it really serve any purpose? Like, do fans really get behind these sort of things? They might. You know, there's probably some people that are interested in this sort of thing. And if they are, then great, so be it. At the end of the day, if all the teams had agreed to participate in this, then all the teams should be participating into it. And that's the thing, too, especially the fact that they did promote this game as a live mic game where you can hear both head coaches and both quarterbacks mic'd up. So essentially it was, you know, I highly doubt fans were tuning in just for that. But also, too, like the fact that the CFL went and TSN went to all the trouble promoting this, and you essentially aren't giving the fans what they're asking for or what you've promised them.
Right.
It really makes the league and the network look foolish by comparison. So quite frankly, I personally don't care at the end of the day. I just think it's a gimmick, whatever. That's my opinion on it. But I think if the CFL really wants to set a precedent, and this is where they really have to take after the NFL, because the NFL does not screw around with all these things. I mean, look at the fines they hand out for, you know, someone not wearing the right cleats, or their socks are too high, or they didn't use this
or
brand
Tony
of tape.
Or Brown's touchdown celebration.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Andrew Hawkins, by the way, I just have to mention that, and former Alouette, he basically did to the NFL, to me it was a huge slap in the face or a mocking of the NFL and their rules. He scored a touchdown this week. He is good. He touchdown, put the ball down, and then walked off like a robot. Hilarious. Now, going back to the live mic, as a fan of the Arena Football League and the many of years that I've been watching it, to me, this live mic thing is nothing new. It's nothing new at all. The Arena League has had it for years, whether it be commentators on the field asking questions to the head coaches or, you know, what they're going to call and stuff like that. You know, Moss and Riley were so, well, we don't want to give anything away. Well, there are very simple ways to stop that. There would be an X amount of time when you can and you cannot have the mic. You black out the mics. And so they're not able to hear for anybody to hear the play. So they can't be quote unquote stolen or whatever they're afraid that's going to happen. You know, for everybody, usually the terminology is usually the same. There's never been an issue, as far as I know, in the Arena League with them being unhappy because teams are going to steal their plays. And I know that I think that's the case there. I think they went. I just think it was an overreaction on their part. They should have just followed through. And I am one where I hope that the CFL does set a precedent, because if they do not, and they let the Edmonton Eskimos and their organization get away with this type of thing. And by the way, I know UT over at the Empire podcast, I know you are not thinking this way, but I'm actually disagreeing with your thought on this. I really think that they should be, they need to have something done to them, or teams are going to do this again. It may not be with the mics. It will be with something else. Of all the things that occurred this year, from the Daron Carter debacle, and that's what it was, even though it's a hometown player, it was a joke of what occurred. To the Kent Austin, slap in the wrist. This something has to be done. In this type of situation where if there was, you know, don't they usually say sometimes a word is your bond, a word is your doc, a handshake is an unofficial contract? Stick with it. Mm-hmm. Maybe the league was going to drop it after 1 year, you know? So it's, you know, the league needs to do something in order to set a precedent.
Yeah.
And basically tell teams, to tell the teams around the league, the saying that if we say you're going to do something and you don't, we're going to do something so you don't with us anymore in the end. Simple as that.
I mean, that's what the NFL does. That's what they pride themselves on, is that the shield is bigger than any one team, any one player, any one coach,
right?
Anything. Like, it's all about the league. And even Dave Naylor on Twitter today had mentioned the possibility, like, this really comes down to, is this a league or just a collection of nine teams? Mm-hmm. With what Edmonton's done for this live mic game. So, like I said, the league itself, the Canadian Football League, has to, in my opinion, really set a precedent here. I'm not saying something super severe, but I mean, like, definitely something that would make people sit up and take notice, saying, you know what, like you said, the league is not to be fooled around with. We do this, we partner up with TSN, we do these things, you may not like them, too bad. We're doing these things to garner interest in fans. We're doing these things to try and help grow the league. And if you're not on board with that, then that's too bad, because This is what we're doing. Everybody else is doing it, so you fall in line. Or there's got to be consequences, severe consequences. Like, if all you're going to do is fine them $10,000, that's nothing. I mean, look at Saskatchewan with their pre-practice roster shenanigans. And a lot of people felt they kind of got off easy there too, because, it's going to cost them.
It should have cost them a draft pick.
At the very least. And I don't know if that would be the correct punishment for this particular instance with Edmonton. I don't know. But, I mean, like I said, but it would definitely make people sit up and take notice. I mean, you're going to have to do something along those lines, something that really puts the rest of the teams and the owners and everybody involved on notice that, hey, if we put together something, we make an initiative for this league, for what we feel would be the betterment of this league, then we fully expect you to comply with that. Mm-hmm. And that's all there is to it. That really is how you have to do it. That's how they do it in the NFL. That's how you got to do it in the CFL. Simple as that.
Yeah. It was an interesting week. Now, it's really tough to see. The Owls are going to have to really play more than just a perfect game this week in order for them to beat the Calgary Stampeders. Going into McMahon, it's not the easiest thing for the Owls in any way, shape, or form at all. This team is just on a roll, and it's hard to say it would take a miracle for the Owls to win, but yeah, that's what it would be. I mean, the Owls, they're 12-23-1 all time at McMahon. They have lost their last six straight in McMahon, and none of the games have been close.
No,
last year was the closest. They've gone through everything for McMahon, from blowing a 24-point lead in the first quarter and losing.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there anything they can do? Or is it just, let's... do we dare say move on to Saskatchewan? Is this one of those games where you want to look forward to, or, it's look past and just go on to the next one?
It's so tough. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm sorry. There's just... you can't even compare these two teams. It's night and day. I mean, even if Calgary were to bench their starters, would Montreal still be able to win? I'm not going to lie. I would have my doubts. And not to put this team down, but the reality is Calgary is just built to win. And they've got depth. They've got cohesion. Everything is just clicking perfectly for Calgary. I mean, even when they're down, they just find a way to get back up. They don't even stress over it. Like, there's no panic with that team whatsoever. Even if they're down like 15 points, it's no problem for them. They just go and they do what they got to do, and they find ways to win. It's unbelievable how good this team is. And a lot of people have said to me, like, yeah, the Alouettes can still make the playoffs. You wait. They just have to win their next six games. Like, yeah, you know that two of those games are against Calgary, the best team in the league, right? Now, again, anything can happen in the CFL. Absolutely anything can happen.
You're right. Just I'm saying, I mean, I know we were talking about it earlier. Remember the year that the under 500 Calgary Stampeders knocked off the best team in the league to win the Grey Cup? So, yes, anything can happen. But,
but I mean, unless...
I'm pleasantly optimistic that the Owls could go 2-2 for the rest of the season, with those two losses being to Calgary. Nothing against the guys in Saskatchewan or Hamilton, but I think the Owls could go 2-2. Worst case scenario, obviously 0-4, but,
Well, yeah. Because, again, Saskatchewan, they've got their act. They seem to be getting their act together, and they're starting to play like they should have been playing all year. Hamilton, yeah, they don't have Zach Collaros, but you know what? They were actually doing pretty good even without Zach Collaros, and they've actually just loaded up a whole bunch of talent on their practice roster, so do not go to sleep on Hamilton whatsoever. I mean, this upcoming series against Ottawa, this home-and-home series against the Red Blacks, that's going to make or break this season for Hamilton without question. And again, these guys are essentially jockeying for first place in the East in a very terrible Eastern division. If someone can win that season series outright, if they can win those two games, I would say that would pretty much sew up the Eastern division for either Hamilton or Ottawa. And then it's pretty much who's left at that point. But I mean, one thing with playing Calgary, I mean, like I said, the way that this team is put together, and then you got Montreal coming in that is they're now licking their wounds. I mean, it's a short week for both guys. I mean, like both teams, so you can't use that as an excuse. But like I said, Calgary right now, they're just built to win, and unless they completely decide to take the day off, I just don't see Montreal going into Calgary's barn and punching them in the face like they did against Ottawa back in the summer.
Now, last time that Montreal was in Calgary, they actually scored 20 points in the first half, but the problem was they only scored 2 in the second. If the Alouettes can score 20 points in the first half versus Calgary this week in the first half, I think they will have a chance. But after seeing what Calgary did to Toronto, which I think, by the way, is a worse team than Montreal is, I'm sure many of you are laughing at me when I'm saying this, but I think it's true. Jerome Messin, I'm sure, is going to run roughshod. But again, they've clinched. So it's, you know, if the Alouettes can score 15 or more points in the first half, they have a chance to win this one. Other than that, they're like 0 for something when they have scored less than 9 points or less in the first half. So I don't know.
Hey, stranger things have happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would you have believed me if I told you that the season series between the Ottawa Red Blacks and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, that Saskatchewan would sweep?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, both games were extremely close and could have gone either way. But, I mean, like I said, for all of Saskatchewan's woes the past two seasons, they somehow find a way to win some of these games that you're just like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. And I would say this year, 2016, especially was just how poorly they started out. The fact that Saskatchewan, two of their four wins so far have come against the Ottawa Red Blacks, which are supposed to be one of the premier teams in this league, not just in the Eastern Division, but in theory, anyways, at least for the first part of this season, they were the team to beat in the Eastern Division.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anything could happen. So, I mean, it's hard to 100% say that, yes, Calgary will win 55-0 kind of thing. But you never know. And that's why we play these games. That's why we have faith that just show up. I mean, if Montreal can just show up, find some way just to keep it together and just maybe come up with some new plays that no one has seen before. That's the thing. If Montreal is looking too predictable, a team like Calgary is just going to pick them clean. So show them something different. And stranger things have happened in this league. I will say that. But I mean, it's very, very tempting just to look past this game and maybe look on to Saskatchewan, and maybe we might have a chance playing there and winning. But against a tough Calgary team, yeah. I hate to sound pessimistic, but reality is setting in, and I just don't see it happening.
Let's just sound realistic. We'll just leave it. We'll leave it at that. So yeah. Try to enjoy the game, everybody. The game's on Saturday. But try to. Question is, I'm sure maybe people will probably be watching the Blue Jay game prior to the Alouettes game or the CFL action that day, because the Blue Jays do start it's late afternoon that day, game 2 in Cleveland, but something positive to look forward to, I guess. We will see you guys next week. Obviously, Cliffy, I will speak to you next week, because our next home game is not for another 3 against the same Calgary Stampeders. anyways, we'll talk to you guys next week. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Yeah,